Calling this moving house, and that's one of the ways they move buildings in America. You'd be quite surprised the size of the buildings. They move the entire building, bricks, whatever they're made of, they just jack them up and move them around. And there was a time in my life when it was quite unusual for me to be in the same place for two nights running. When I was on OM in India, every night I would be in a different location. Sometimes it would be in a building, but that was pretty rare. Most of the time I was just in the open countryside, and I would go to sleep by the near side front wheel of the truck I was driving and watch the stars and wake up in the morning. But it was never, and sometimes you just sort of wondered, where on earth am I? And it's very disorientating, it's quite unsettling. But when I left OM and married Anne and we settled down to where we've lived for the past 40 plus years, close to the church just at the back there, which I've been here, as Sam said, since I was nine. That's 63 years I've been here coming to this church. I first heard the gospel round about where Alia is sitting back there. Having settled down, my job as a driver meant, though, that I was constantly moving around. Every day I was going here, I was going there. Sometimes I'd be going to Eastbourne. Other days I'd be going uptown. Sometimes I was just driving backwards and forwards along the same route. But I was constantly moving. And spiritually, too, I think I've been on a journey. I've been constantly on the move. I couldn't say that I've settled on one particular thing or anything. God has somehow kept me fit enough to be moving. It's, in many ways, it's just a testimony to God's faithfulness. I suppose you could say it's almost like being a spiritual Bedouin, a tent dweller. The Bedouin tent dwellers have lived that way for thousands of years, hundreds of years. And early in the Bible, we encounter Abraham and his descendants. And Abraham was a tent dweller. Much of the action of the Old Testament happened in tents. You think of the incident where the bloke got the peg hammered through his temple, the enemy of Israel. Happened in a tent. Loads of the things that you read about happened in tents. And before the Jerusalem was built, God himself dwelt amongst the people in a tent. So, I'm going to read you this. This passage of Scripture has been around for quite a long time for us, and particularly for me and Anne. It's Isaiah 54, verses 2 and 3, and it says, "Enlarge the place of your tent. Make your tents large. Spread out. Think big. Use plenty of rope. Drive tent pegs in deep. You will extend your boundaries on all sides. You're going to need lots of elbow room for your growing family. You will soon be bursting at the seams. You're going to take over whole nations. You're going to resettle abandoned cities." That is a big job, but it's exciting. It's one of these, this is one of those passages that I've lived with for a long time. And on the face of it, it looks quite simple, doesn't it? I mean, make the tent bigger. That's pretty easy, you know, but we need to understand what that means. Because, you see, it starts with these. It's sheep, goats, camels. You see, you couldn't just go down Halfords and buy a tent, a bigger tent. They didn't have Halfords. They had to make a tent. Now, that meant things had to happen. It meant keeping goats. It meant keeping sheep. It meant feeding for them. It meant caring for them. It meant getting them to where the grass was, because this is a sort of a desert region. There's not much grass. If there's been rain in the hills, there'll be some grass. So you've got to move there. They were constantly on the move. So the fact that they lived in tents actually helped what they were trying to do. It took a lot of time because you could only cut the wool at certain times. I mean, you had to wait for it to grow long. Well, how long does it take for the hair on a long-haired goat to grow? A year? It took time. And all the time they had to be fighting off whatever animals would be trying to kill their sheep and their wolves. Constant vigilance, constant moving, constant work, keeping an eye out for the sick animals. But then the job wasn't finished, you see. After that, you had to cut the hair. You had to wash it. You had to wash it. Just a minute, we're in a desert. So you've moved to where there's some water. You've got to find an oasis and wash this hair. Then you've got to comb it so that it's all straight and separate. Still not finished, then you've got to spin it. You ever seen anybody spinning? You can do it on a spindle. My daughter does it on a spindle, spins her own wool. And it takes time. It's laborious. Having made the thread, then they've got to weave it. And they used a ground loom. It was about that wide. They would make these strips of cloth about 25 foot long. So a meter wide, 25 foot long, all by hand. But you still weren't finished because you needed another three or four bits for the side. So overall, you're weaving something like 250 feet of material in order to make your tent. Then it's just lengthen your cords. Where do you get the rope from? I mean, there's no marina nearby that you could go and buy some. We're in the desert, don't forget. You had to make the rope from hemp or grasses. Then you've got to put it up, haven't you? Have you ever tried to put up a tent, one of them shelters on the beach? You know, the thing, bit of cloth with some sticks in it, and you bash it in the sand, and the wind blows, and it immediately falls over. Have you ever wondered how they, in the desert, how they kept a tent up? What they used to do was he would take the rope and they grab some of that tumbleweed that was coming through constantly. They grab a bunch of tumbleweed, they would dig a hole and bury the whole thing, the rope and the tumbleweed, about 2 foot down, cover it up with sand. And the tent would stay there for as long as you wanted, absolutely rock solid. They weren't stupid, these guys. They knew what they were doing. So, have we forgotten anything? Anything we've forgotten? We got the tent canopy, we got the rope, we got the pegs. What have you forgotten? Poles. They weren't poles, they were Bedouins. Right, take a look at this picture. Spot the tree. And that's what they faced. I mean, look at that tree. Could you make a tent pole out of that tree? Can you see the tree? This is what you were dealing with. Wood was a precious commodity. It took, again, sacrifice. It took effort. You might have to trade some of your sheep in order to get, which meant, of course, you wouldn't get so much wool, hair, to make your tent with. And they didn't have nice straight branches, so your pole might be a bit, you know, all over the place. You see, this tent-making business was a serious business. It took a lot of planning. It took a lot of time, a lot of planning, a lot of work, and a lot of commitment. And you would end up with something that looked like this. Really colourful, isn't it? And you know why it's kind of colourful like that? It's because the sheep were brown. It's pretty simple. That's the colour the sheep were, or the goats. Very interesting, this tent material they made. They made it so that when you held it up, you could see through it. And you think, well, how's that going to, you know, help them? But in actual fact, if it rained, what would happen is the wool would get wet and expand, fill the gaps in the material, and it was waterproof and warm. But when it was hot, it still allowed the breeze through. Clever stuff. You see, they got it all worked out. Why would you want to enlarge your tent anyway? Well, it might be for this reason. You got children, and they'll be all different ages. They're all living with you. In this tent, inside, you've got the two poles we saw. Along that pole, there would be a cloth divider. And the ladies and the children would live in one part, and the men would live in another part. And the central part was the family space. And that's where everybody met, and that's where they ate. But if you've got more children, you need more space. But there's a couple of other reasons as well. You might do it for this reason, because God told you to. And to go out into the desert, for them, was not an unknown. They knew the desert. They knew where they were. They knew where the mountains were. They knew where the water holes were. But it still took courage to boldly go every day. There's another reason. You might have an important guest. The local sheikh is coming to visit you. What are you going to do? Just settle him down where you are? No. You make the place look nice. If the queen comes to visit your house, you make the house look nice, I hope. So we've got a number of kingdom purposes there. There are a number of things there. Because you see, in God told us at the end of Matthew to go into all the world, preach the gospel and make disciples. We've all been told to boldly go, but we know where we're going. So we've got these kingdom purposes. God, you see, is a big God and he's got big plans. That's why he said, enlarge the place of your tent, because God is on the move. And we, his people, also need to be on the move. Over the last few weeks, months, leaders have been feeling that the Lord is telling us it's time to enlarge the place of our Sunday morning tent, that we need to expand, make way for more capacity in our Sunday service. So we've been discussing this, we've been making plans and looking at equipment and looking at venues. At times it's a bit scary. It's a bit like being on the flight deck of the Starship Enterprise. Scary. And yet exciting at the same time. When the people of Israel left the slavery of Egypt, they've already experienced a number of miracles. I mean, just getting out of Egypt on its own was a miracle. And all the things that the Lord did to set them free before they walked out of Egypt. As time moved on, at Sinai, they were given the law, and they also got the instructions for building the tabernacle. Now, tabernacle is a posh word for tent. It was a tabernacle. And this was to be the dwelling place for God amongst them. And this is how it worked. On the day the tabernacle was set up, the cloud of God's presence covered it. From evening until morning, the cloud over the tabernacle looked like a pillar of fire. And this was the regular pattern. At night, the cloud that covered the tabernacle had the appearance of fire. Whenever the cloud lifted from over the sacred tent, the people of Israel would break camp and follow it. And wherever the cloud settled, the people of Israel would set up camp. Whether the cloud stayed over the tabernacle for 2 days, a month, or a year, the people of Israel stayed in camp and did not move on. But as soon as it lifted, they broke camp and moved on. So they camped or traveled at the Lord's command. And we read later on that they sent out 12 spies to look at the land that God had promised them. 10 of them saw problems and 2 of them saw the promise. And I want us at Lighthouse to be people who see the promise and not the problem and move in obedience to God. For 40 years, the people had moved in the desert and they'd moved about. And every day there was manna for them. It's not that they were starving in the desert. They weren't. Every day there was manna for them. Enough for 2.5 million people lying on the desert floor every day. And at weekend, there was quail, small birds, quail, knee deep in quail. Everybody had plenty to eat. So it wasn't as if they were starving. They had every reason to be healthy because God was keeping them healthy. Every day the cloud hovering over the tabernacle was there and in the pillar of fire of night. The people knew that God was with them, but they still moaned. Why am I telling you this? Why am I telling you stuff that you already know? These are all familiar stories for people that have been hanging around churches for any length of time. Or that went to Sunday school. Why am I telling you? I'm telling you because I don't want you to make the same mistake that the people of Israel made. After 40 years, the people that had moaned and whinged, they'd all died out. Because God couldn't take a people into the land that were just going to moan and whinge. Moaning and whinging doesn't build a kingdom. Doesn't take a country. Moaning and whinging doesn't defeat an enemy. Satan doesn't mind you sitting around all day moaning and whinging and saying this and saying that. He couldn't care less. But when you stand up and say, God is with me, he starts to get worried. I want you to not only see the promise, I want you to enter the promised land. So the Israelites had to cross over Jordan. I think, oh, that's all right, okay. Have a look at this. Come on, guys, it's all right, let's go. That's the Jordan in flood. And the Bible tells us that when they came to cross the Jordan was in flood, like that. Can you imagine Sam coming up, or me even, coming up to the edge of the Jordan? It's okay, we're going across, guys, come on. Yeah, and they would all say exactly what you said, after you. I want you to change your thinking. I want you to change what you say. I don't want you to be sitting here saying, after you. I want you to be saying, I'm with you. I'm with you. And the moment they took that first step into the Jordan, the river stopped, the water piled up, and the people crossed over on dry land. Now, we know this stuff, don't we? We know it. God made a way where there was no way. The water stopped, and they took the first step. And crossing the Jordan was just a step away. Just that step. And a step on the way. Because after that, there were battles to fight. There were giants to slay. There were cities to take. There were crops to plant. There were fields to harvest. Because this was a land that was productive. It was flowing with milk and honey, as it was described. 2-3 crops a year. When you take a step of faith with God, when you put your foot in your Jordan, and every one of us has got a Jordan, things that we have to face, things that we have to overcome, God says, I'll be with you. Do you want to go where God is? Because if they'd stayed behind, the tabernacle and the people were moving on. The fire was crossing the river. You say, no, I don't want to go over there. It looks a bit scary. But that's where God's going. Now, I don't know about you. I want to be where God's going. It may look scary. It may feel unsettling. It may look like a lot of work. But the cloud is lifting. And our God, the God of the pillar of fire and smoke, is on the move. Amen. That means we're going to be a people on the move. But there's something different for us, because each one of us is the tabernacle. God promised us that he would be with us, that he would be in us. So now the fire and the smoke are with us, and God is with us. God goes with us. And when he says move, we move. Jesus looked at some people and he said, with men, this is impossible, but not with God. Yeah. All things are possible with God. God can pour on the blessings in astonishing ways so that you are ready for anything and everything, more than just ready to do what needs to be done. It's Romans. He even let his own son suffer for us. God gave his son for all of us. So now, with Jesus, God will surely give us all things. Whatever it is you feel you need for this time that looks a bit scary, that might feel a bit uncertain, God can give it to you. All you have to do is ask. He's promised to provide. Enlarge the place of your tent. We have a Jordan to cross. We have a land to possess. We have battles to win. We have giants to slay. But God is with us. And our God is on the move. We are moving house.